You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow, and for the rest of the hour, a birthday tribute. Those of us of a certain age may remember sitting in a classroom under that fallout shelter sign, remember listening to a broadcast of the World Series on a tiny machine, the iPod of its time, the transistor radio. Remember how you used to thread the little earphone, a little earpiece up your shirt, right up the sleeve, come out your neck, put it in your ear, sort of lean over with your hand cupped around your ear, listening to the World Series in the afternoons when it was played at the right time of the day, but you were in school. And, well, all those memories, that's 50 years ago. The transistor turns 50, and its invention really ushered in a new year of miniaturization and globalization. Before the transistor itself was invented in 1947, you recall the prevailing technology. Remember, the radios are made of those vacuum tubes. You turned them on, and you waited for a few minutes for them to warm up. People today don't understand that concept of warming up the radio. It was cumbersome and not really easy to assemble into a computer, which the early computers were made of vacuum tubes. And they had to find a better way of making these switches instead of using vacuum tubes. And the transistor changed all of that. And it introduced us to the idea that the smaller could be better. And because it was small and battery-operated, the transistor radio allowed people all over the world, in remote jungles and deserts and villages, to turn on and tune in to radio news broadcasts that they could never hear before. It was a wireless way to penetrate the Iron Curtain, and it made tales heard around a campfire come from the scratchy voice on a tiny plastic box. So this hour, for the rest of the hour, we're going to talk about the birthday of the transistor radio. And here to talk about with me is Robert J. Simcoe, who is author of The Revolution in Your Pocket, published in the fall of 2004, issue of the American Heritage of Invention and Technology, a great little magazine, American Heritage of Invention and Technology. That's this fall issue. He joins us by phone from Boston. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, thank you for having me and helping to celebrate this interesting technological historical event.
What are your first memories about your first transistor? Remember, they used to call it the transistor. You didn't have to say radio. Did you bring your transistor with you?
Well, my first remembrances of it were when my father brought the first radio home, the transistor radio, and it turned out to be one of the Regency TR-4 radios, and I was about in the seventh grade. And they were a novelty then. No one else had them. An interesting story was I had a paper route at the time, and I took the transistor radio with me as I collected on the for the papers. And a little old lady came up to the door, and she looked at me and said, "Oh, you poor boy," and gave me an extra tip. Because in those days, people weren't used to seeing anyone except people who had hearing aids with a earphone in their ear.
That's right. Then, because the transistor radios were small, and because the Japanese became synonymous with miniaturization, why is it that the Japanese were making transistor radios?
Well, eventually they took over the market and went after it in a way that the people in this country did not, I guess. Mm-hmm. I mean, we clearly had in Regency and Texas Instruments, a couple of companies who realized the potential very early on and went after it in a very unusual way.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I dug into the story, I found it really intriguing that two small companies got together to actually pull this accomplishment off. Mm-hmm. TI in 1951 had decided that they wanted to be a technology company and to actually go after making transistors. And then they licensed from Bell Labs, along with about 25 other companies, the rights to produce transistors. Mm-hmm. But they worked at it, and they were trying to, at that point, work in germanium, which was a much more difficult material to work in than the current silicon, which most transistors are made with.
And I think people don't realize that transistors are still around us everywhere. They just don't see them like they used to.
That's true. It's this radio was the very first transistor consumer product, which was very interesting. But today, when you look around, it's just absolutely amazing. I bought a video card the other day, and I looked at some material on it, and it said that the video processor on that card had 220 million transistors in it.
Yeah. Those first transistors, if I remember from building these little kits, were about the size of an eraser head. But today, there you can, like you say, you can put 100 million of them on a tiny little computer chip.
That's right. They were, and they were individually wired in. Even the printed circuit board was an innovation in this Regency radio.
Did they have to come up with any technical breakthroughs to make the transistor radio, these little pocket radios?
They did. It was interesting that they set the goal to make themselves a pocket radio. It would have been very easy to have just, say, take the transistors and wire them up the way, you know, tube radios were. And that day, everything was hand-wired with, you know, very large components. But they really had this vision that they were going to make a small pocket radio. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, they had to essentially develop the miniature component market. At that day, they started with the on-off switch, which they had to make themselves. They had a miniature loudspeaker, which was smaller than anything that had been made before. Mm-hmm. The transistors themselves required different circuitry, the electrolytic capacitors, which store charge, had to be different, made mm-hmm. differently. Mm-hmm. Just so many things, and they accomplished it all in a five-month period, which made it a very interesting story for anybody who's been involved in product development. That was an extremely short time to have accomplished all of this.
And then Sony was among the head of Sony, that wasn't really called Sony in those days, was among the first that went to Bell Labs to learn how to make transistors and then make them into other devices. And I'd heard that because the Japanese were prevented from making any kind of weaponry after the war, after World War II, they decided to go commercial to the public, while the Americans were trying to miniaturize things for, you know, military uses.
That's right. It was interesting that it took them a little bit longer to get started. Sony and TI, you know, at the same day got the license from Bell Labs, but it took Sony actually about another 3 years from the time that this radio was introduced to come out with another radio. Yeah. In this country, there were some other companies like Raytheon who came out about, you know, 9 months later, to 9 months later. But these two small companies had a real jump on the marketplace.
1-800-989-8255. Let's go to David in San Antonio. Hi, David.
Hi, Ira. How are you?
Fine.
I just thought I'd tell you a little bit of story. When I was 10 years old in 1963, August 63, I got my first little six-transistor silver tone radio. And I don't know whether it was germanium or silicon back then, but it ran on a little cylindrical 9-volt battery. And I used to do exactly what you're talking about with the earpiece threaded up through the sleeves and everything, only it wasn't the World Series. It was usually rock and roll radio. And I had been caught several times by my fifth grade teacher, Mr. Burke, and listening to WABC in New York City and rock and roll. And November 22nd, 1963, he said, oh, you got that thing again, huh?
Oh, goodness.
Listening to current events, huh? And I said, yes, sir, I am, in a kind of puzzled way. And he says, you are? And listening to the news and everything? And I said, yes, sir, I am. There's nothing but news on every single channel. And he said, what are they saying? And I said, the president's been shot. He said, give me that radio.
See, that's a great story. Of course, around that time, you know, the space race had already started. And they were dragging TVs into classrooms. You could watch on televisions, you know, the launches of the space race, but you couldn't watch the ball game. So you had to listen on the radio in any way that you could.
Yes.
And we found ways to do that.
And they even had, and we one-upped each other with the transistor count in our radios. And occasionally they'd put a couple of extra two or three transistors in there that were used just as the diode junctions, just to increase the count to better for marketing purposes.
That's right. I remember they had just dummy transistors in some of these things.
Yeah, some of them were actually dummies, yes.
Yeah, I remember because I used to take them apart. We're talking about the, thanks for calling. We're talking about the anniversary of the transistor radio this hour in Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Robert Simcoe, what strikes you as the most amazing thing about a transistor radio, the early ones?
Well, I think the early one, what struck me was the risks that the people actually took to do this development. Pat Haggerty at Texas Instruments committed about $2 million to the project at the time that Texas Instruments' total revenue was about $25 million. And they started, you know, they decided to make a radio before they had transistors that were actually capable of operating at the frequencies needed to make a transistor radio. Mm-hmm. So they went on blind faith, and as I said, within a five-month period, they had solved all these problems.
There was even talk, I remember, and I think it may have happened because my memory is fuzzy on this. Maybe you can help me out. There was talk in the early days of, I mean, we were in the peak of the Cold War, the Iron Curtain in the 50s, of dropping thousands and thousands of transistor radios behind the Iron Curtain so that people could listen to Voice of America or hear. It would be tuned to one frequency.
That's right. There were the marketing person for Regency Radio thought there was going to be a tremendous market, and I saw someplace that he had estimated that there would be about 20 million radios to be sold for people's bomb shelters, that they would need a small portable radio there to be able to listen in when the event happened.
And in fact, the transistor that eventually became used in most of the radios later on, and only the equipment, was not the same design as the original invention in 1947, is it?
That's right. People actually transitioned from germanium transistors to largely silicon transistors. And it took them a long time to come up with really reliable ways to make them. These early transistors, and when TI was building them, only about 5% of the ones that they produced actually worked. So it was a very interesting process. It took another few years before they got onto silicon and got to have processes where they could get yields more like 80 or 90%.
Go to the phones. Is it Leah in Biggsville, Illinois?
Yes, it is.
Hi, go ahead.
Yeah, in the early 50s, I was trying to build a pocket radio you could put into a cigarette case. It had two vacuum tubes in there, and it was quite a challenge.
I'll bet.
And like 1952, when I was an engineering student, I was trying to do a research paper on transistors. And I looked all over Chicago for a book called Electrons and Holes in Semiconductors, which seemed to be the only publication out there anywhere. And I went to the University of Chicago and John Carrar Library and so forth, and never could find a copy of that. Here's a case where I was trying to learn about transistors, and there were no sources.
Yeah, it was very hard.
RCA, they are the ones that published that book, but I couldn't find it among the public.
Probably could find it now in an old bookstore.
Yeah, for 10 cents or something.
On the Internet. That's an interesting story. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, you bet.
1-800-989-8255. Let's go to Sam in Jacksonville. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Ira. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
I'm well. Got two questions.
Sure.
One is, did the invention of the transistor either follow or precipitate a change in battery technology, because there's no point in having a small radio if you have to have a big battery? And second, my son is a musician, and he has joined a movement to switch back to tubes because he said sound is so much better with tubes. I don't understand that. I was wondering if that's even true or if he's just subject to an illusion.
A lot of people think it's what they called warmer. You know,
they think
it's a warmer sound.
But yeah. I don't understand why that would be.
Well, let me ask Robert about the batteries.
Okay.
Yes, it actually did. I mean, what the tube radios required two batteries. They would require a low-voltage battery for the filaments of the tube and a high-voltage battery to run the plates and all the circuitry. The choice of batteries for the TR1 turned out to be a 22.5-volt battery, which was used in hearing aids. And then in a couple of years, they found that they could actually make radios that used AA and AAA cells, the same size that we see today.
Yeah. Go out and go on eBay and buy yourself an old transistor radio, I'd suggest everybody, on this anniversary. Robert, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much for having us.
You're welcome. Robert J. Simcoe is the author of The Revolution in Your Pocket. Revolution in Your Pocket, that's published in the fall 2004 issue of American Heritage of Invention and Technology. Kevin Wade is our technical director. tighten up those teeth. Our audio engineers are Matt Galick and Paul Masiello, and Enrico Cardi in New York. Greg Smith composed our theme music. And we had help today from NPR librarians Kim Molesky and Alphonse Finn. You can always surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com, where you can click on the teachers button and get free curricula about transistor radios and how to teach it in your class. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.